This call is being recorded by the meeting organizer. By staying on the call, you are giving your consent to being recorded.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to give it just a second to make sure that those that are calling in from Tallahassee or elsewhere are on the call. Before I ask Holly McClanahan, our secretary, to call the roll. Holly, are you on the phone?
She says that she only hears music.
She only hears music? Okay. Good morning. Maybe it just takes a second to catch up. Will you get her on the phone? See if we can work through the technical issues to make sure that she's able to hear.
She can hear, but I can't. We cannot hear her, right?
Okay. Do you have her on mute? Okay, we're testing. Okay. So maybe it's muted. That could take a check. All right. Can we check with her? Okay. Holly, can you hear us? I hear something. Maybe it's a volume. She might. I hear something. So.
She's writing something. She okay. Doesn't have a role. She doesn't have a role.
Okay. I have a partial role. So can she? But she can hear us, right?
She said, I'll check again.
Okay. Testing, testing. Jack Heekin, can you hear us?
She thinks we have it unmuted. Well, unmuted.
Have her hang up and dial back in and see if there's, maybe it's the back. Okay, try dialing back in. Not you guys.
presentation mode is now disabled.
Okay.
Melinda, can you hear us now?
No. Can you hear us?
Yes, are you there? This is Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
Yeah, it was on mute mode on our end.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Melinda, perfect.
Can y'all hear me? This is Holly.
Hey, Holly. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Jack is up on the line.
Hey, Jack. Very good. Okay, we're good to go. Holly, do you have – I've got a complete list of the board members if you'd like for me to call the roll, but if you've got a list, please go ahead and call the roll.
I don't in front of me, Melinda, so if you can call, then I'll just make sure I catch everybody. And next
All right.
time I'll
Sounds
make sure we have one, okay?
Holly. Christian Watt.
Here.
Kim Mills. Andrew Collins.
Here.
Angela Connect. Here. J.D. Patterson.
Here.
Mr. Rollison.
Present.
Bernita Nelson. Marie Walker. Okay, and then I also have Holly McClanahan is functioning as the secretary. We also have Francis Coyle, who is our budget expert from the Office of the Governor. Joanne Osborne, back in Tallahassee, is my assistant. And then Jack Keegan is the legal counsel for this commission. Anybody else that I missed that would like to be recognized on the call, or nobody up here on the panel? So,
Melinda.
Okay. Yes.
Melinda, did Ms. Nelson, is she there? I did not hear her.
She is not here, and
okay.
She did say that she was not going to be able to be present. So
I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss hear her. I'm going to put you on mute now.
Okay, and I don't believe Marie Walker is on the call either.
Okay.
All right, well, good morning, everyone. Good morning, City of Opa-locka. Good morning, Mayor Taylor and commissioners. So pleased to be here again today. In this great city. I tell you, you've got some great people. I've been able to meet some of the folks in the lobby, in the community, just some very warm-hearted folks in this community. So it's been a real privilege to meet everybody and to see how many people care truly about this city. So I'm humbled by that, and so thank you. We have a big agenda today. We have a lot to cover, and there's several things that we need to address. The very first item, just as you heard, this meeting is being recorded. We do hold the meeting in the sunshine, and it is publicly noticed on the Opa-locka website as well as the Florida Administrative Weekly. So we've got a very large agenda before you. You should have a copy of the agenda, and the very first item for us to cover is the vote on the adoption of the rules for procedure for this board. And I want to just kind of highlight some of the key elements of that just so that the public, in case there's not enough copies, kind of understands what we're voting on today. Based upon the executive order, we shall adopt rules for how we will behave as a board. So we provided a draft at our first meeting. We've reviewed that, considered comments, reviewed that with our legal counsel, and are prepared, hopefully, to take a vote on the rules today. The rules talk about the membership and composition. We serve at the pleasure of Governor Rick Scott, and an action is made by this board by a majority of the board members. A majority is at least five members of the board voting in the affirmative in order for us to take action, and that also constitutes a quorum. The Article 2 of the rules...
I have a question to that.
Yes.
Is it the majority of the board, or is it the majority of the board present?
That's a very good question. The way I read it, and Jack, if you could weigh in, the way I read it is that it takes five members to take action, and action by a majority of the board... says all actions of the board shall be taken by a majority of its members. And then it talks about the quorum. So, Jack, if for your consideration, if you wouldn't mind looking to see whether or not the majority can be taken of just those present to constitute an action and report back to us. That would be great. The rules also specify committees, and today we have resolutions about the creation of two committees at this time. We do need to have our meetings at a location that's accessible to the public. We must meet at least once per quarter. We can also call special meetings, we need to provide notice of those meetings. And if we were to have an emergency meeting or a special meeting, we need to post notice of those special meetings and give at least 24 hours prior to the scheduled special meeting. As I mentioned, the City of Opa-locka website, as published also on the Florida Administrative Register, are the two means that we have currently in use to publicly notice those meetings. We do allow for participation by members of this board by conference, telephone conference, so that as long as everyone can hear one another, and we've been working through some financial or some technical difficulties, I think that they'll be hopefully ironed out here very shortly as we move forward, get a little bit more comfortable with the equipment. But as long as we can all hear one another, then we can proceed. A quorum is at least five members, including the chair, for purpose of conducting board business. We shall also provide written minutes, and those should be promptly recorded. And the minutes shall consist of a brief summary of the events of the meeting. And so it talks a little bit about the officers of, and secretary shall be appointed by the chairperson. And thank you so very much to Holly McClanahan for her willingness to help take minutes, properly recording the meetings and the actions taken by this board are critically important to making sure that we keep for the record the actions that we agree upon in this form. So I would like to entertain comments from members of the board relative to the rules of procedure or questions. And Jack, if you would like to weigh in at this point and offer any clarification on the rules as legal counsel, I sure would appreciate it. Jack.
Sure. I will clarify. A majority of the members present is the majority that is referring to and taking action. At least five members of the board, including the chair, must be present to constitute a quorum in order to conduct any business. But it's a majority of those present in the quorum that must vote in favor of an item.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions from members of the board? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the rules of procedure for the board?
So move.
I second.
And second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Next item. Vote on the approval of the June 22nd meeting minutes. As you know, we held our first meeting in this very location on June the 22nd, and we do have meeting minutes in the package. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to read those ahead of time. Those have been slightly amended to have any technical corrections, but I'd like to entertain any comments from members of the board on corrections, clarifications, modifications, edits to the board meeting minutes of June 22nd before we take a vote. Okay. Your comments, I would like to entertain to accept and approve the meeting minutes for June 22nd.
Madam Chair, I move.
Second. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Vote on resolution establishing committee chairs. There is in your package of information a resolution. Jack, would you mind taking us through briefly resolution as it relates to the creation of committee chairs before we entertain comment?
Absolutely. This is the first resolution of the Financial Emergency Board. It establishes two things. It sets up the Contract Review Committee, which is established as a subset of the Financial Emergency Board. Mr. Rawlinson is designated as the chair of the Contract Review Committee. The resolution also identifies the general scope of the work that will be performed by the Contract Review Committee. And the Contract Review Committee is ordered to report on its progress at the regular meetings of the board. The second thing this resolution accomplishes is it establishes an estimating conference committee as a subset of the Financial Emergency Board. Christian Weiss is designated as the chair of the estimating conference committee. It sets out the general scope of the responsibilities of the contract review, estimating conference committee. And it also orders that the estimating conference committee will report on its progress at the regular meetings of the board. That is the resolution.
Okay. Any questions or comment from members of the board? Okay. Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. That leads us to item number 5. Somebody else call in? Okay. Leads us to the vote on the ratification of payment to BB&T Bank. And I'd like to call on Ms. Yvette Harrell, if I could, to, I know this is a little unplanned, so I apologize. I'm just calling you out here blindly like that. I'd like to get you to maybe come explain briefly the email exchange between you and I relative to the bond payment. You had brought an urgent matter to my attention back post-meeting, and in order to avoid a default, we were entertaining the prompt payment and wanted to get your perspective, kind of a synopsis of what occurred relative to that payment to BB&T Bank. If you could explain that for the board, that would be great. Thank you.
Sure. The payment that Chair Miguel is referring to is the payment that was due on the debt service for the 2011 bonds. I think they were explained at the last meeting. Basically, the question that was raised was whether or not the funds that were used to make the payment were reserve funds. I know that there had been some discussion about that. The answer was no. I need to kind of go back a little bit to explain a little bit as to where the funds actually were actually derived. Okay. Previously, one of the requirements for the 2015 bonds, follow me, that's the bonds, 2011-2015. One of the requirements under the 2015 bonds was that we segregate the funds from the utility tax in order to make that debt service payment. We had done that. The actual documents require that we provide for an account where those monies are deposited, and from there we're to make the debt service payment. There had not been, and still is not, a reserve requirement for the 2015 bond, which means that there was nothing in addition to the monies that were required to make the debt payment that we needed to reserve. For whatever reason, the city had practiced that we would leave the entire amount that had been set aside for those bonds. For example, on average, we receive about $150,000 for those payments. The debt service payment is about $45,000 to $50,000. We would leave the entire remaining, for example, $100,000 in the account, although it was not a requirement. Mr. Brown, the city attorney, and myself, and David Shiverton, the manager, actually reviewed the bond documents and discovered that the reserve that we had been basically self-imposing was not necessary and that those funds actually could be used for the general purposes of the city. To confirm that, I actually sent and had conversation with the bank and asked whether or not that was indeed the case. They advised that that was indeed the case and that the funds could be used for general purposes. I then removed, there was approximately at the time $811,000 in that account that could have been used previously for the operations of the city. At that point, we had those funds removed from that account and placed into general fund. At no point, though, did any of the debt service fail. We continued to make the payments as normal. The portion of a portion of that money, the $811,000, was what was used to make the 211 bond payment. So I know it's a little convoluted, but the money was actually the money belonging to the city, and the city used those funds in order to make the 2011 payment. Was that clear? kind of a little bit.
Any comments or questions?
Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
The funds are ad valorem tax funds or the utility funds?
Those are utility funds that I was just referring to.
And those both those sets of bonds are for utility work?
No, just the 2015. 2015 is paid by the utility fund.
And the 2011 is paid by?
That's the penny tax. And
it's a half.
The half-cent sale tax and the revenue sharing.
And the revenue sharing.
And what are those bonds for, 2011? What did we... What are those bonds? Retiring those bonds for what? What were they sold for? To do what?
I'm sorry for next year.
The bonds, what are the purpose of the bonds? The 2011 bonds, what was the purpose of those bonds?
I don't know what it was for. Initially, it was for, well, generally, it was for infrastructure. Yes? It was for infrastructure.
The general obligation bonds?
Yes. Yes. No.
The GOB bonds, or the bonds approved by the commission? What kind of bonds are they?
Well, the answer to that question is yes, they were approved by the commission, but I'll have Charmaine explain specifically the type of bonds that we're talking about. And we're talking 2011, correct?
2011 and the 2015. What was the purpose of the bonds, and what kind of bonds are they?
My name is Charmaine Parchman. The 2011 bond was used to fund infrastructure construction. Projects?
Water, sewer, is that what we're talking about?
Both.
Okay.
And the 2016 bond was used to acquire municipal buildings for the city.
Okay.
And they're both... Right. Initially, we went out for a construction bond for 2014, but since we decided to purchase a building instead of build a building, then it was rolled into the 2015 bond. And so the 2014 portion was paid off using a portion of the 2015 bond.
And if I may add, the 2011 is a bond, general obligation bond, as was stated with the half-cent sales tax and the municipal revenue sharing as the main thing. And I have a question about that, how it's working right now. The 2015 is a note. So it's not a bond per se, and the note is, like Ms. Parchman said, was used to pay off the 2014 bond, and the 2015 notes are, as she explained to me yesterday, they're actually an A and B note, and the A note is 2.65% rate because it's a note that is tax-exempt note. Part of the building, it is my understanding, however, is going to be used for private purposes and therefore cannot be financed with tax exempt. So that the B note, the B portion of that, is it carries a 4.25%. The important distinction between the bond and the note is the bond has a sinking fund where while there are payments required only every 6 months, and 12 months, depending on its interest only and interest and capital, so just like a mortgage, like an escrow account is kind of working like an escrow account where you make your monthly payment, but then the insurance and the taxes become due on a certain date. And that's how the bond works. The note, however, works like your mortgage does, the mortgage payment, and they have a fixed payment.
Okay.
Every month that is, $27,000 or $15,000, depending on the A and B note. So to follow up on that, I have a question because Ms. Harrell stated correctly that the underlying distributions from the state, the half cent and the municipal revenue sharing are way in excess of what is required for the bond payment. So my question then is, the money comes from Department of Revenue, I think, or it does go through financial services, I'm not sure. But it comes to you, and then does it go into the reserve account 100% and you take 66% out of there to fund general obligations of the city, which you're entitled to do? Or do you go to a clearing account first and then split it, say, two-thirds, one-third? How does it?
Okay. The funds come straight from the state into the city's general operating account. Okay. At which point the entire amount of the communication taxes and the FPNL taxes is then transferred to the 2015 tax revenue account. Once it comes close to the payment time, I then remove the portion into the principal and interest bank account. And the remaining balance stays in the tax revenue account.
So it stays in the account?
Yes.
So you are accruing an increasing balance of unused funds?
Yes.
That had been the practice. We actually had spoken to bank officials in order to continue that, and they expressed a concern in light of the current status of the city. They recognized, or at least they were going to get back to us as to what bank management wants as far as a reserve and or a certain percentage of those funds to be left in the account. In light of the fact that there is currently no reserve requirement in the actual documents, they also have expressed that they recognize it will probably require an ordinance, a revision of the ordinance, I think, Mr. Brown, or an amendment of the ordinance in order for that to happen, because as it stands right now, there is no requirement. However, based on the circumstances, and I think they actually are planning to meet with Ms. Miguel or some members of the board in order to discuss their concerns. So I just wanted, just for the sake of transparency, although it's not a requirement currently, they have expressed that they would like some security, if you will, to give them a comfort as to the continued payment of their debt service.
And is it the same situation of the flow of Half Cent and MRS?
It's the same situation, yes.
So,
go ahead.
I mean, so you don't, even though there's a reserve requirement, but, you know, there's an excess amount of money that is really not needed for the sinking fund.
Agreed. So. However, when we met with the bank a few weeks ago, they expressed that because of the current status of the city, what their initial comfort level was has changed. And so in order to get them back to another comfort level, they were definitely going to provide to us, and I would assume to the board, their recommendation as to what a reserve would be in terms of giving them a comfort. That's still kind of up in the air at this point. They haven't responded to us in spite of the information we provided yet.
Thank you very much.
One of the key points that I want to make here has to do with the fact that we held an emergency meeting on June the 29th at 9 a.m., in which we asked that all expenses of any dollar value be pre-vetted by the board before the city was authorized to pay them. This was one of those payments that shortly after we met at 9 a.m., approximately 12:30 that afternoon, it was brought to Yvette's attention by members of her team that this was one of those payments due by July the 1st. And so had it gone through the expenditure review process that we agreed upon with Ms. Harrell and the board just that morning, this would have been in default. So we would not have been able to make the payment. So what I'm looking to try to accomplish today, and I appreciate the comments of the board and want to undertake an additional review of the bonds, each of the bonds that were in your package yesterday, Christian, as part of your committee. But for purposes of moving on this agenda item, what I'd like to do is ratify that we authorize the payment, the city to make the payment to ensure that the July 1st deadline was met to pay the principal and interest for this particular obligation. So if I could, unless there's further questions, I would like to receive a motion ratifying that we directed the city to satisfy this debt service payment on June the 29th, if I could get a motion to ratify that approval, that would be perfect. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
Any second?
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Can I ask another question on
yes,
this?
Please. Just
are there any arbitrage issues with how this money is being how it's received and how it's being, sounds like it's in a pool of cash. Is there any issue with interest bearing on this money?
I do not know.
You don't know?
Yeah, I don't think that we've undertaken a comprehensive analysis at this point on the bonds, but I have been in contact with Ben Watkins, who also participated on our call on the 29th. So we could we can take it up now, but I would like to
I was just curious if we knew if there was an issue with that, but we don't know yet.
We don't know the answer to that yet.
That's
correct.
That's fine.
But I do have an agenda item to cover your very point, so we'll get to that here shortly, and I appreciate the question.
May I ask a question?
Please.
And I'm not going to make it a form of a motion yet, but it seems to me that both on the expenditure side, these issues, especially over the next 25 days, may come up on an occasional basis. And I feel that I would like to empower the chair and the vice chair maybe to vet together an issue like this where, you know, the city would be faced with default if not immediately allowed, and allow a concurrent vote by those two folks, the chair and the vice chair, to allow such an expenditure, and then use the same procedure, have it ratified by the full board at the next meeting. And I would like to make the same, not make, suggest the same motion on our hiring freeze. When I talked with Ms. Parchman and Ms. Harrell, it is fairly obvious that especially the department that is under the most stress from both the whole situation and, quite frankly, from us, is the finance department, the budget department. And if there is if there's opportunity or need to hire somebody, I would make the same suggestion that it can be signed off by the chair and the vice chair, overruling our hiring freeze. And so I'll just throw this out because it seems to be apropos where we are.
I think your comments are right on point, and I have a question then for Commissioner Rollison relative to the vote that we took on the 29th, empowering your committee to review expenditures. Do you see any conflict with that process that was adopted on the 29th?
Well, you know, it raises concern because it's these payments shouldn't be coming as a surprise. Everybody should know what's due, when it's due, and it should be fairly easy to get a report or a list of these things that are coming, and it's not a last-minute item. Somebody says, "Whoops, we gotta pay this." So I know it's going to take a little bit of time to get into sync with each other, but there has to be a process that comes together to where we get this stuff ahead of time, that when we come here, we can act on it, because there's different committees that have different facets to look at. And when I report on the contracts, I will present some of the concerns that I have from what I've been able to review at this point. And I'm a little apprehensive about approving payments to go out on contracts that I have questions about, and just because a payment's due, maybe the contract is not supposed to be in place. So, you know, an emergency is one thing, and when you're dealing with a hiring freeze and there's one or two positions that we're looking to bring somebody on board, I think those can be addressed in some manner, but I just don't want to get, I would not recommend that we get into a process that allows these little things to pop up and then be able to call one or two people and say, "Listen, I'm in a bind. I've got to get this check out or I'm on a default." It kind of defeats the purpose of having this board in place to begin with, because that may start to become the routine. And I think it needs to be clear that business as usual has stopped. And it's going to go through this board, and the expenditures are going to go through this board. The contracts are going to go through this board. And if we don't start to control the outflow of the cash, you're never going to get this under control. We're just going to be moving along. So I think it's up to staff, the administration, and the leaders of the of Opa-locka to put together the packages to get to us in a timely fashion. I mean, right now we're meeting every 2 weeks. I don't know if that's going to continue, but I would think that there are payments due coming in August or September. We would know what those are, and we could be alerted to those early enough on that that's coming.
Would you be okay, if I may, Mr. Chair, would you be okay with limiting this motion for the rest of this month?
Yeah, I think I don't have a problem with that. I think we need to get into a system, and whatever that system is going to be that both parties can comfortably live with, because keeping in mind the city has got to operate. We're not, we can't hamstring it to a position that we're dead in the water. I don't want to do that, but I would go along with that. I would go along through the balance of July. Any of those things that have to take place, that we could clear them by X, whoever we decide that wants to be. But I think it should be short-lived.
Okay. Before we take up a motion on that issue, I'd like to move to agenda item number 6, because I think that maybe this is also part of the continuing story of the challenges that Opa-locka faces. And this next item has to do with the updated cash flow statement that was provided by Ms. Harrell and Ms. Parchment. We met yesterday. The Revenue Committee met yesterday, the Estimating Conference Committee. And from that meeting, there was some discussion on the cash flow statement that was provided by staff. There's several documents that were provided by staff. I had made copies for the public and decided at the last minute not to distribute the bank statement because we didn't have the financial account numbers properly redacted. So if there are any records requests, certainly we want to make any of our materials available to the public. But staff here at Opa-locka gave us an updated cash flow statement at our request. We also got a bank statement, the most recent bank statement for period ending June 30th. And we got some truth and millage documentation as well as an Opa-locka utility audit documentation. The first item I'd like to talk about is the cash flow statement. And I would like to ask Ms. Harrell and Ms. Parchment to approach the podium to walk us through the cash flow statement that's been provided and explain to us and answer any questions that we may have relative to the cash flow.
Madam Chair, is that so I'm looking at the right document, the cash flow projection for the period of March to September, is that the
That's document? Correct.
Okay.
It looks kind of like this, it's a spreadsheet. So if we could, it takes us through the revenues first, and then it goes into expenditures, and then the bottom line. But if I could ask for you guys to kind of walk us through this document, tell us the source of your information, comment on the validity of this information and what the bottom line numbers are.
I'm going to defer to Ms. Parchment since this is actually her creation, and then anything that I can assist with in terms of supplemental information.
All right. Ms. Parchment.
Yeah. We began the cash flow initially by using the bank balance at the beginning, at the onset, so in March 1st, when we did the initial cash flow.
Okay.
The beginning balance was the bank statement amount.
Okay.
However, subsequent to that, and getting some advice, we are now using the reconcile balances for the actual March, April, and May. The revenue are actual sources of revenue up until June. Those are what we have received so far, and those are the actual amount that we have today. July, August, and September are still projected numbers.
Okay.
The projected numbers were derived from using 3 years of information, prior information, to forecast exactly how much we get per month.
Okay.
And that's for the revenue.
Let me ask you a couple of questions on the revenue side. In June, the ad valorem piece is $617,000. Is that an actual?
Yes, that's the actual.
Is it the sale of tax certificates? So where is that source?
That's unusually high, and from the information that we received from the county, a number of payments were received for the delinquent taxes, and so that has driven our amount up to date.
Okay.
At the top of that column where it says June, it does still say projected. Is that just an error or a typo?
That's an error.
Okay.
And
so
June is actual.
June is actual. And it's based upon reconciled numbers. Is that correct?
The June beginning balance for the bank is not based on reconciled as yet because we're still reconciled in May.
Gotcha. Okay. So March, April, and May have been
reconciled.
Okay, June is unreconciled.
Right.
Okay.
And in June, it says on the second page, there's a $700,000 almost transfer in from the bond reserve transfer. So those are the local CST and the
FPNL, yes.
And those are the dollars that are not needed to retire the bonds?
So
you do transfer it out at times. So
that was the only time we did that transfer.
That's the one we were just talking about where we ratified? Okay.
No. This is a transfer from the fund into general revenue. This is not
a transfer in. Okay.
This is not a payment of bonds.
Gotcha. Okay.
This is a...
We're talking about the same... numbers. We're talking about the same money. The money that you see there, that when I was explaining the money that we did not have to reserve and it was self-imposed, that's the money that's 61 that
right.
is on that last column. And to answer Ms. Miguel's question, the monies that were used to pay the 2011, those came out of that same pot of monies that was not necessary to be reserved.
Their corresponding entry on the cash flow projection to show the cash out for that?
I think the 681, the way I read it, has nothing whatsoever to do with the repayments of bonds or interest. Or am I wrong?
The 681 was split into segments. 681,000 was moved to general fund for regular operations. The other 110 was moved to an account to pay the 2011 bond.
Okay. Right.
And that's the
110,692.70? That's the 110,692.70. That's correct. Yes.
Mine doesn't have the 10 in it. Mine just says 100,692. Am I looking at the right place?
Page three.
June.
100,692. It's the last number on June's column.
Boy.
At the bottom.
Would you mind coming and pointing it out to me? I don't see 110 on page 3. Okay, mine's on. Okay, I do see one on page 4.
Okay.
And mine's 100,692.70.
Right.
Okay, that's the one?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I follow. Okay. All right, please continue.
And that's for the revenue portion of it.
Okay.
The expenditures were initially done in the same as way of doing taking 3 years' worth of information from prior years and doing an estimate of what we should be spending on a monthly basis.
Good morning, Ms. Nelson. Welcome. Thanks so much. We understand. Yes, Ms. Nelson was attending budget hearings back in her city. So thank you so much for being here. Holly, please record that Ms. Nelson's here. Ms. Parchment, please continue.
Yes, that's how we began the process, by doing an estimate of looking at 3 years' worth of prior expenditures.
Okay.
The same is true for March, April, May, and June. Those are actual numbers. And if you note on total amount spent, went from a $2.2 million expenditure in April to less than $1 million in May. And in June, we went back to $1.3 million in expenditure in June. So we have actually seen a significant reduction in our expenditure.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, if I may. In June, the salaries went up by $200,000.
Okay. My notation is that we had three payrolls that were paid in June. One at the 1st of June, the other was sometime on the 16th, and the last one was at the end of June, 29th.
Bi-weeklies?
Yes, we're bi-weekly payroll. Sum it up, right now we're projecting that by September we'll be short. We have a shortfall of $450,000. You can see that we probably have some financial issues by July, because we're like $751,000, which is not easy enough to make our regular expenditure.
Okay. Can you restate what you just said a little slower for me?
Okay. At the end, the cash flow projection shows that by September we'll have a shortfall of $415,000.
Okay. Yeah. So in September, the city is in the hole by $415,000.
Yes. And that's by holding all our expenditures as low as possible.
Okay.
And
we're in the month of July.
Yes.
And ending balance here shows that of the revenues minus expenditures, the ending balance is $752,691.13.
Right.
Going down to almost $162,000 in August, and then going in the hole $415,000 in September.
Mm-hmm.
At what point will you be unable to pay your bills?
Without the initial... we're having any delays in receiving our revenue. I believe around July, sometime this month, we will see we start struggling to pay our bills.
Okay. So this month, the month of July, we will, as a city, be struggling to pay our bills.
Yes.
Of those bills, obviously we need to prioritize the expenses by this board to make sure that the top priorities get paid to continue operations and services in the city. At what point are you unable to make payroll?
I'm sorry, Ms. Miguel, forgive me. Before we answer that, I think it needs to be brought to the board's attention that as of the last commission meeting, the Opa-locka Commission voted to sunset what is currently the 32-hour work week and return it back to 40 hours. So what you're seeing here is based on the current 32-hour work week. When those numbers return to 40 hours, this is going to look substantially different. And as of probably the last pay period in this month, we will be extremely challenged at best to be able to cover that expense.
Okay. So the City Commission has voted to return all staff to a 40-hour work week effective when?
Effective as of July 14th. It sunsets on July 13th, which is the last day, which is the next pay period date.
Okay. And when was that vote taken?
At the very last commission meeting.
July 2nd?
I believe it was June 22nd.
June 22nd, okay.
Madam Chair, if I may ask.
Yes.
I mean, here's an example of the commission taking an action that has an impact on cash flow. That should come to this board, and we either approve that or we disapprove it. And we're looking at the cash flow that I'm looking at. I'm saying, you know what? That's not going to happen. They're going to stay on 32 hours. So when they have these impacts, that needs to come to this board. It has a financial impact of running out of money this month. And they're the legislative body. They can take those actions. But all of those actions that have an impact on cash flow are going to come, as I understand it, are going to come to this board to either approve or disapprove. And I don't know if that's been submitted to us to look at. I should have been sitting here on our agenda today.
Well, to give the board some information, that the vote took place prior to the board deciding that everything needs to. Well, first of all, the way the current EO is written, it didn't require prior authorization. And that may have been one of the concerns or perhaps some of the confusion. Subsequent to the vote, we all understood at that point that every dollar that left the city had to be prior authorized by the board. However, when the commission made that, when the commission voted on that, that was not currently something that the board had already passed. It was not something that had been voted on. However, since that time and up until this time, every other dollar amount that has even been mentioned has been presented to, and I guess maybe that's one thing we perhaps need to figure out, how we present it to the entire board. I was not advised to present it to the entire board. I was actually working with, at the time, Chief Patterson under the direction of Chair McGill in terms of the immediate expenditures. And perhaps if the board chooses or desires, we can establish a different procedure so that the entire board is made aware of the current expenditures that are leaving the city.
I respect the vote of the commission to have a single payroll impact. Because it looks like it goes on and has a continuing, recurring payroll impact and therefore a recurring budgetary impact, I think that this board ought to revisit that decision sooner rather than later to determine whether or not it's fiscally responsible for us to authorize the city to return back to a 40-hour work week in light of the inability to make payroll and or pay expenses this month. So the situation is very dire. There's a lot of categoricals in this expenditure list on the cash flow that I also think need to be analyzed and studied in great detail. One of the things that I'd like to do is ask Francis Coyle, how long would it take you to validate this cash flow statement with supporting materials provided by the city to ascertain the validity of this information? And maybe before you answer, Ms. Harrell, do you have any concerns or Ms. Parchment about the validity of any of the numbers that are contained in this cash flow statement?
I don't necessarily think I have concerns per se about the numbers and the sources. As I explained to the committee yesterday, my concern is I'm looking at my bank statement and I'm looking at the expenditures. For example, I believe there was about 1.6 in the bank, and I sent an email advising that I needed about $800,000 to pay previous payroll related expenses. That leaves me with $800,000. Assuming that all of this money is realized, then the answer, I guess, would be no. But I can't state the operations on the city on assumption. So the answer to your question is yes, there's definitely a concern of mine. And as I stated, I'll reiterate that I believe at some point this month we will be extremely challenged in terms of making not just payroll, but just the continued operations of the city.
Francis? Okay. I would like to ask you to work with the city to validate the information that's presented in the cash flow as of June 30th, 2016. If you could look at the projections in June, July, August, and September, maybe do some sort of sampling of the actual expenditures in March, April, and May to validate the numbers, to get a sense of the validity and accuracy of the information. Obviously, the information that Ms. Parchment presents to us and Ms. Harrell presents to us is very dire. And, you know, this is about the numbers and where the city is. And the numbers are very bleak, yeah. And so we're going to have to call for some very austere, measured steps and review and verification of the revenues and expenditures on a very careful and expedient manner. Let me just summarize real quickly some of the things that we undertook at the last meeting of June the 29th. When we held an emergency meeting based upon concerns that Ms. Harrell presented about the financial picture for Opa-locka and her request for some budget assistance, which we were able to gather, and I want to talk about that also in further detail. At that meeting, we addressed several urgent items. One was that request from the city to identify available resources to assist the city with validating some of their numbers, specifically for the budget of 2016-2017 and the financial recovery plan going into 2021. Commissioner Rollison, you mentioned that business as usual needs to stop, and I agree. We've got to implement some cost-cutting, cost-saving measures right away in order to help this city continue operations. You know, this is not about black, white, Hispanic. This is about us working together to come together and help this city get out of a really dire situation. We've identified Francis Coyle from OPB to help us, or help the city validate the numbers that you're working so diligently to put together for this board. We also had staff volunteered by Ms. Nelson, and I hope that maybe you can identify that name for us, and I really appreciate that, from the City of Miami Gardens. We've also received some offers from Ashley Hepburn, a budget expert, who's in the audience with us today, that I'll call on him in a little bit. But we took several drastic steps related to the city's expenses and operations. At that meeting, we directed that all bank statements be sent to the members of the board, and we did get our first bank statement in the package provided to us. We asked that this include all credit cards, gas cards, effective immediately, so that this board could begin an expenditure analysis right away. We directed that the city institute a hiring freeze and to do that immediately so that we could ascertain on a mission critical basis which staff needed to report to work. So there was return to a 40-hour work week. Now I think suddenly falls into our jurisdiction because it's got an ongoing fiscal impact, and so we need to revisit that matter. We directed that a review be conducted of the police department. Mr. Patterson so graciously volunteered to spearhead that review of the PD, including a tax equivalency calculation be conducted about the size of the police department relative to the number of law enforcement officers. Is that the right number for the city? We implemented a review process for payments of expenditures of any amount be effective immediately. Let's see, we also wanted to obtain an update from the city and the CPA firm on the status of their audit. And then yesterday, we voted that an assessment be conducted of the water and sewer public works process. And Mr. Patterson once again graciously volunteered to assist with that. Just to summarize the results of that meeting, I think it kind of shows that there's a lot on the table here for us to do, a lot of work that we need to undertake, and all while we're trying to kind of organize and coalesce as a board. Francis, with your help and assistance in validating this cash flow analysis to the extent that we want to be able to trust the numbers being provided to us from the city, you know, the sooner rather than later, getting in there with the detail and making sure that the, you know, I always was told trust but verify, so we trust that you're submitting the information, but we've got to verify that that information is in fact valid and an accurate depiction of the challenges that you face. And assuming true, it's very dire and very bleak. So rather than me go through each of the expenditure line items in the cash flow that's been presented, I know that the chair of the contract review committee has agreed to undertake some of that, and he's on the agenda a little bit later in the meeting. So I think we've certainly got a picture of exactly how dire the circumstances are financially for the city. So keeping that in mind and keeping that in the forefront as we move forward, I know that there's a couple of other documents that we were provided, including the bank statements and the truth in millage documentation. So if we could move to the next item, I want to obviously come back to many of these issues that were raised up in this this discussion, but I think some of it will be taken care of or cured in our discussion or addressed anyway at an upcoming item on the agenda where chairman of that committee, Mr. Rollison, is going to be presenting. So,
can I have a quick question to
yes,
staff?
Sir.
Ms. Parchman. Sorry. You thought you could escape, then. You said that right now a certain number of staff is at 32. If it was returned to 40 hours a week, the estimated payments of $417,000 would go up to what amount approximately? I mean, it's not a straight 25% increase, is it?
It's a straight 20% increase. Everyone is on the 32 work week hour. Our work week right now, so we'll be in the street.
So everybody is on?
Mr. Weiss, the police department and the Parks and Recreation Department were not a part of the 32-hour work week. So
okay.
It will be 20% for all of the other employees.
25.
So 200 people in the city. 50-ish in the police department. So 150 minus parks and recreation is what number? Okay.
Well, parks and recreation are about 16 at this point, and the reason I'm giving an estimate is because there are part-timers as a result of the summer program. So
okay.
That's why I'm giving an estimate.
So
we're probably talking about 125.
Okay, so about 125 would return back to 40?
Yes.
Okay. And then the basis for the full-time in the Parks and Rec and the police department, can you explain the rationale for the decision for both of those staying at 40 hours?
With respect to the police department, the rationale was that we had already suffered losses in the police department and as a result were quote-unquote understaffed. And so if we were to extend the 32 hours to them, we believe that it would perhaps even further impact the level of services to the city. As far as the parks and recreation, the reason, again, that we did not have that to be applicable to them was because, again, we were coming into the summer season, and if we took them to 32 hours, it was likely that those individuals would then have to incur overtime. And that actually would defeat the purpose of trying to avoid the additional.
I wanted to ask a question because I wasn't at the commission meeting. Don't know the rationale behind it to a degree. But in the county, we have to always put on any item the fiscal impact of that item. Was there any discussion about the fiscal impact of returning from the 32 hours?
Well, actually, I don't believe that there was a specific discussion, but there is there's usually a memo that corresponds with the resolution that details the fiscal impact. I can get that to the board as I get back to now.
Thank you.
I have lots of questions about some of the detailed expenditures, and I would like to get an explanation of each of those line items at some point, but I think let's move on from here before I dig deep into the expenses of the city of Opa-locka. But any questions on the cash flow, further questions or comments from the board? Okay. Bank statement, I think, is self-explanatory. We also had a submission of some Florida Truth and Millage. Is there someone in the audience from the city that is able to describe who asked this be included, the purpose of this information? I believe it was in response to our request for some information relative to the key benchmark dates for the Truth and Millage, like the 35-day window, the notification from Department of Revenue, some of those budget hearings. I believe that that information came or stems from that question. Is that correct, Ms. Harrell?
Melinda, this is Andrew. I actually provided that, and it did come from that discussion.
Okay. Andrew, would you take us through your package of information that you wanted to cover, and feel free to bring forward any information or questions, because we've got staff here that hopefully can answer anything that you've got.
Absolutely. Mostly I just wanted to kind of keep everybody and remind the staff there, they're well aware that there is a detailed process, and obviously we're sorting through, you know, getting all the information and the data on the revenue and expenditure side, as we discussed this morning. A lot of work to be done there. But concurrently, we also need to think about these processes and dates in the background. So certainly we can't forget about the fiscal year starting October 1. So again, as of right now, we discussed a little bit in our committee meeting yesterday about the work that the Miami-Dade property appraiser is doing, setting up the tax base. Given the numbers that they certify during this period of time right now, the city holds these series of workshops and budget hearings and starts to, as you mentioned, legislatively pick out a millage rate. So mostly this information is just to provide some background. There's some 2015 information there from last year. There were some advertisement issues, I believe. So the Department of Revenue tracks this very closely and stays in contact with the taxing authorities, the city in this case, about the requirements to publicly notice these voting hearings. Last year it happened in the month of September. That's sort of a little bit later than a lot of other entities around the state, but certainly within the timeline. So mostly I just wanted to bring this point up and say, you know, at the same time we're doing all this, let's not forget about the important work of sort of getting on the city schedules, and I think it's a good area for our board to be involved in and sort of provide our expertise at the state level, utilize whatever Department of Revenue resources we have, and help them through the not only the trim setting process, but going into the new budget for the year.
Have any of the hearings been scheduled yet for
No, ma'am, the hearings have not been scheduled yet. However, our city clerk typically prepares the schedule. What I'll do is I will get with her and give the board a full schedule in terms of what's necessary and what's needed so that we can begin to prepare for notices and that sort of thing for the workshop.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
Yes, please.
We're in July. The maximum millages are due to the county August 1st. When are those meetings taking place to set that number? They're not scheduled yet for
no,
July?
Sir. They have not been scheduled yet.
Why have they not been scheduled?
I don't actually have an answer to that question. It's probably going to meet the, I guess, meet the scrutiny standard as far as the board is concerned. I don't have an answer to the question. I can say, however, that in with everything else that's been going on, I don't know if that, quite frankly, had been priority. I recognize how important it is. However, I don't know at this point why it hasn't been scheduled. However, having said that, I will assure that the clerk will get that schedule as soon as possible and forward it to the board by the end of the day.
Okay, perfect.
I mean, that number
has Madam Chair.
For the trim notices to go out.
I understand that.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Andrew, I just want, this may be an opportunity for us to leverage some resources from the Miami-Dade Property Appraiser's Office. So as we consider additional volunteers or our help, it may be worthwhile. I can certainly reach out to the Property Appraiser's Office and talk with them if they might be able to lend a hand and give whatever expertise on the local level with the city as well.
Excellent. Would you please go ahead and do that?
I will.
Report back to us at the next meeting, if you would.
Yes, ma'am.
But also, if I may, let me just ask a question. At the time that maximum millage is set, is it not also required that the proposed budget is submitted to the commission?
No.
I mean, is that's supposed to happen? So, I mean, is there a FY17 proposed budget in the works to be put together for presentation to the commission?
No, sir. One of the things that I have continuously expressed to the board was an absolute need to get help with respect to finance and specifically my budget. I think Ms. McGill and I had spoken in detail about the need for someone to assist because I recognize that not only do we not have the FY17 budget, but there is some question in terms of the accuracy and validity of the previous budget. And I thank you, Ms. Coyle, in advance for all the help that you're going to give us with that. I recognize that there is a need to present that budget in its final form, but in fairness, we haven't even actually started the specifics into getting into those numbers, which is one of the reasons that Ms. McGill even had the emergency meeting, recognizing the dire straits we're in terms of timing.
Let me point out something before, Mr. Rowling, just one second. One of the things, while the state has the interest and the ability to validate the information provided by the city and to work with the city, the city is still on the hook to prepare and meet the deadlines of our interlocal government agreement. Let me just draw attention to Section 8 of our interlocal government agreement that I think that we're at. The city shall notify the governor immediately in writing if the city, the mayor, or any member of the city commission determines that the city is violated or anticipates a violation of any of the terms or conditions of the agreement, including but not limited to the failure of the city to submit any plan or document required by the agreement, an affirmative act or failure by the city that jeopardizes the city's financial recovery, and any deviation by the city from any plan or document hereunder approved by the governor. The notification of a violation or anticipated violation shall contain sufficient detail for a determination of what actions are necessary to remedy the reported violation. The failure to comply with the terms and conditions of the agreement shall constitute a failure to resolve the state of financial emergency facing the city and constitutes malfeasance, misfeasance, and neglect of duty for the purposes of Section 7, Article 4 of the Florida Constitution as provided by Section 218.503, Subsection 6. While I think we've all verbally been talking about the inability to meet the deadline of August the 1st, and the state is providing resources to help validate the city's numbers that are coming from the city, I still think that it's incumbent upon the city to notify the governor in writing of their anticipated violation of the terms and agreement with regards to submitting the August 1st budget. And so if I could request that the city go ahead and provide that written notification so that we are in compliance with the interlocal government agreement and contain any details so that we can understand what it takes to resolve them. Obviously, Francis needs to continue working with the city, identifying the resources with Ms. Nelson any of the other resources to help validate those numbers. But the validation of that number is just one part of the process. The preparation of those numbers is still incumbent upon the city, and the submission of a budget is something that was agreed to. And so I think that we need to proceed with that written notification to the governor immediately in writing of the inability to meet the deadline of August the 1st. That includes the financial recovery plan as well as the budget, as I understand it. So I think it's important that we make sure that that notification occurs in accordance with the agreement so that we can figure out what to do next. Also on the agenda, we've got some additional things to cover as well, but any comment by the board before we move to? Yes, Ms. Nelson.
In speaking with my counterparts at the City of Miami Gardens, we are ready to bring some resources, some extra eyes to bear. One thing that was asked, if we can get not only the proposed budget for FY17, but the actuals for 14, 15, and year-to-date for 16, so we can sort of have a gauge on what's realistic in expenditures.
Realistically speaking, is there any possible way that the city will be able to have a budget document to us for validation by August the 1st? I know we've got 20 days from August the 1st to.
That's completely dependent on how quickly we can come up with the numbers and whatever is needed, I guess, with respect to the spoil. I understand that we actually have the figures. It just depends on what's needed in terms of manipulating them.
Okay.
I am not at the point where I would be comfortable saying it's not realistic. Seeing that it's just a fix. I understand that it's going to be time-consuming, but I am not completely convinced that we won't be able to make that August 1st deadline. However, I will acknowledge, because I believe one of the visions of the agreement requires that even if we're not sure or if there's a possibility that we need to do that. So I will indeed send that notice, but with that said, there's still a possibility that the August 1 deadline could be met.
Okay. I wish you all the best. We'll work on our end to validate what you prepare, and we'll work quickly.
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes.
No. I think the administration should be looking at some type of a modified zero-based budget instead of working off the line items that presently exist. You need to look at those contracts and obligations that you have no option that you have to pay, and that starts the base. When you start looking at expenditures that are above that with the budget situation that you're in, it's very unlikely that they're going to be approved coming through to us anyway. So working off of 13, 14, 15, 16, and so forth, and what the history is I think going down the wrong path. I think you have to start looking at, we got nothing. What do I have to pay? Just if you're working out of your own household and you're saying, okay, got to pay the rent, got to eat, kids got to go to school. But you know what? I don't think we're going to movie night. I don't think we're doing this. I don't think we're doing that. That's where you're at. That is where you are. And to me, for those things to come to us in a proposed budget, some of these things that I see on your cash flow, and when I get to take a look at some of these contracts, they're going to go away, and they're not going to be approved. You have to come to the realization of the position that you're in. You're in July, you're going to be out of cash. We haven't even looked at the labor contracts. When we look at those labor contracts, they may be voided. That's the reality of what you're looking at sitting here under oversight that you are. The objective is for this city to survive. And that's where you're at. So I wouldn't take last year's budget and start manipulating that and taking a 2% reduction here and that's that. You need to start looking at light items that are going out. They're going away because they're going to go away from us when they hit here with us. So I just give that to you as my piece of advice. I've been through this with the city of Miami. That's what we had to do. We started, and painful is not the good word for it, because there are going to be especially social issues that you deal with. If you try to help this agency and that agency, you're not going to be able to do that, because you need to go back to the basics of why the government exists for this community. Life safety, the basic services that you provide so the city can survive. That's where you are. And the quicker everybody on the team, the elected officials and the administration come to grips with that, that's where you are. That's when you're going to start to come out of the woods. Until then, stuff's going to be coming up to us, and we're going to say, no, no, no. And I can tell you in the city of Miami, the elected officials would go back to the agencies and say, hey, don't blame us. We voted for it, but that board, they struck it down. Now, we can play that game, or people can start to recognize the position that you're in and the fiduciary responsibility that everybody has. We're here as oversight. We're here to keep things in line. But we are not here to run the city. And the people that run this city have to recognize the dire straits that you're in and take those actions at that leadership level to fix this. And if that doesn't happen, we are going to do it.
You know.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can appreciate the tone from one of the members, but I'm John Riley, Commissioner of City of Opa-locka. I can only speak for myself, sir, but I recognize the purpose of government. I do. I will sponsor the first hearing for the military race for July 13th, which is next week. You set the military rate, the budget come after the fact, because you have to know what dollars coming in before you deal with the budget. That's how it's done.
Right.
So we would do the trim after that. Okay, there's a number of other areas that I would be looking into as we move along. We proposed to have the mayor to call a special meeting so we can hear from our auditor. And if that, whatever needs to be dealt with on that will be done at that particular time. We do have leadership in this community, and you'll find out that it is there. We take everything seriously. No, it's not a game, because everything we do affects people's lives and infects the lives of our employees and the lives of our residents. This situation did not occur overnight, and it won't be fixed overnight, all right? And that's how it's done. So I will sponsor what needs to be sponsored for the next regular meeting, and then we will call what necessary special meetings in order to achieve what we need to achieve thereafter. Thank you very much.
Any other comments from the board? Okay. To go back to the bank statement, I do want to make sure from Mr. Harrell, the bank statement from City National that was in our package, are there any other accounts besides City National Bank associated with the City of Opa-locka?
There's one other account, LETF fund, that is in Wells Fargo. It's approximately 2,500. Basically, previously the LEC funds were being deposited into that account, and there's been some issue with getting the funds to not be deposited into that account. We've received confirmation from the government that those funds will no longer be deposited and we'll close that account, but that's the only other remaining outstanding account.
Okay. Thank you.
That's a state or a federal LETF?
It's a state LETF.
You have a federal?
I don't have an answer to that question. I'll find out
okay.
for you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Opa-locka utility audit documentation. Do we want to discuss that? Anybody on the phone that brought that item forward? I believe that it probably came out of our discussions from our June 29th meeting. Okay, hearing no comment, I'm going to move on. Okay, our next agenda item.
I'm sorry. I did ask Ms. Harrell about that issue.
And okay.
She's going to check up. She was not aware of that, and she's going to check with her staff on that particular issue.
Okay. And she'll be reporting back at the next meeting on that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next agenda item is an update from each of the committees. Christian Wise, will you give us some update of yesterday's meeting? And or any other comments?
Sure, I'm glad to. The estimating committee met yesterday in this chamber yesterday afternoon. The purpose of the committee is to gather in phase one revenue information from publicly available resources like the Department of Revenue, the Department of Financial Services, and work done by the Office of Policy and Budget within the Governor's Office. Most of my staff, albeit the small staff that I have, has been involved in it, and it's the Office of Finance and Economic Estimating Conferences. I can't even remember my own job description. And we are reconciling with our data with city data. So we are in the process of that. Our goal is to agree with city staff on forecasts for two issues or for two time periods in particular. One of them, maybe most importantly, maybe not, is the remainder of the fiscal year so we can ascertain how much of that budget deficit of $415,000 can be alleviated through one measure or another. And then, of course, have mutually agreed on revenue estimates for fiscal 16-17 that include all the state revenue shared and local option taxes that are administered by the state, i.e. Gas taxes and communication services taxes, have official estimates, have estimates that were provided by Department of Revenue staff, validated by our staff, and agreed with by city staff. Further, we will in contact with city staff to get and validate estimates for the next 2 months or 2.5 months for revenue sources that are solely based on the city's general authority, mainly water, sewer, and utility taxes, and then a whole host of miscellaneous fees and red light cameras and the like. So we will look at every one of these revenue sources, come up with our estimates, run it by the city staff. Where serious disagreements exist, we'll sit together and work them out, quite frankly. Then the same, as you pointed out, the same really large and perhaps larger effort will take place with the help of Ms. Coyle on the expenditure side. So everything I just said, instead of revenues, fees, and taxes, you put in spending expenditures, and we will obviously have to do that over the next 2 months so we figure out how to make payroll on September 30th and July 31st, as it sounds, and then have a budget that is clearly balanced with some view towards repayments of the variety of loans that are made from funds and other restricted sources over the last couple of years. And that's and there were a couple of motions made to these effects. That's our summary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Kirsten. One of the significant votes or pieces of action items that came from the meeting yesterday was for, as you mentioned, Francis to work with the city staff on validating the forecasted revenues and expenditures. I think we've touched on that a couple of different times. So I think that was a very important action item that came out of yesterday's vote. One of the concerns that we had that was discussed yesterday was about the need for hiring support staff in the finance department. It's my understanding also that you lost your budget chief and that you may need assistance immediately besides what the city, what the state's providing, but internal to the city to be able to work with the finance department. And I wanted to see what the assessment is by those of you that have like done some preliminary look at the numbers, maybe you, Ms. Nelson. What do you think from your perspective on getting documents from the city? Is the city of Opa-locka in need of augmenting the resources in the budget and finance area?
My initial assessment would be yes.
Okay. And like as in the either temporary help?
I would say temporary.
Okay, so clerk level or accountant level or budget level, mid-level, what are we talking to help them achieve a balance in that?
My assessment would say mid-level and up, nothing lower than mid-level.
Okay. So
I was not privy to the meeting that happened yesterday to see how comfortable you are with the professionals that are left here with the city. I don't know them personally. I hadn't worked with them, but just looking at the documents that are coming out, I would say that there was some initial to get them through this process. There's help that
okay.
brought there.
Okay.
And I very much agree with that. I had a private conversation with Ms. Parchment, and while she has some very capable staff, they are, by and large, not all of them. We didn't talk in great detail, but inexperienced. So I think, and I may slightly disagree, that I think actually some permanent mid-level and upper staff may be needed to replace all the folks that have been lost.
Well, and looking at the timing, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be smarter to get the consulting firm in here to comes in with that type of expertise and then still allow them to hire and bring some people in that would work in unison with them, because bring people in, it's going to take them a while to get up to speed. It's going to take a firm a while to get up to speed, and we're at the 11th hour. I would think that we'd be better off in the assistance is to get a firm in here that is capable to hit the ground running, work with these numbers. The validation of the numbers are eventually going to come and be weeded out. To hold up the process because of the validation process, the process has got to move forward. There are legal timelines that are going to have to be met for the taxation process and the budget process that are required by the state of Florida. They're going to have a balanced budget as they go into the new fiscal year. I mean, that's what they've got to do. And clearly, it appears they do not have the staff on board at this moment to do it. But the idea is to, I would think, bring in a firm to help them get to that point, not have them rush into hiring some people and just taking what initially comes so that they get good people that want to stay and learn the process and make a professional finance and budget department situation So I would look at a tandem thing to authorize them to get a firm in here and to go ahead and hire those key people that they feel are necessary to start them on the path of recovery.
And I think ideally that may be the way to go, but it's probably, as always, a matter of money. So, I think the way at least we were temporarily going is we were asking for competent staff, volunteers from other cities. And ideally I would agree with you, but as always.
Ms. Nelson?
And I was going to allude to that. I agree with you with temporary bringing in a consultant at first and then assessing what skill sets need to be brought to bear on a permanent basis. Knowing that we're cash-strapped, we're asking employees to, toil back to 32 hours, but yet we're building up another department, they send the wrong message, but we've got some capable consultants on the local level that can help with that while there's some assessments being done on what permanent staff can be brought to bear after this process. Or during the transition of this process.
Okay. Okay. So, on the one hand, we're talking about making austere cuts, and then on the other hand, we're talking about hiring in a firm for expertise. How do we reconcile those needs? Any comments? Okay. Ms. Harrell, any comments?
I noticed that there's a CPA engagement letter with HCT, CPA, and consultants that was executed for billing and collections. I don't know what the status of that is. There was a flat fee of that.
Is that the same firm as the auditor?
Yes, ma'am.
And I believe that the commission and the staff has brought to bear some questions. I'm not too sure if that's
the firm. And members of the county as well. So we would want an independent firm from HTC to work.
In response to what seems to be a mixed message, unfortunately, we're in a situation where there's going to be some unhappy, for lack of better words, individuals. The reality is we are overstaffed, and there are levels, our staffing levels exceed what we actually need as far as the optimal operations of a city. Having said that, though, we recognize that our immediate need has to be to get this budget and this financial situation straight before we can even go on. I recognize that it may send the wrong message, but at the same time, the cliche term, it's a necessary evil, because the only way we're going to actually get through what we are required to do as a city is with the assistance. And the only way we're going to get that assistance, quite frankly, to the extent that we need it, is by hiring or bringing in someone to assist us to do that. So, I'll deal with staff and trying to get them to understand that at the end of the day, we have an obligation to the state and the oversight committee, and if I'm going to do what we need to do as far as those obligations, then that's a difficult decision, but one that has to be made.
Absolutely. Staff stability. I know yesterday one of the things that came up was whether or not we had stability in the finance department and at the city manager level. I know that the city has undergone lots of changes at the city manager level, three city managers in a short period of time. And then losing the budget director and a struggling finance department. What kind of commitments do we have from existing staff to see this thing through?
City manager actually is hired by the commission. And so I can't stand it here, being that I'm the acting city manager and there's still some outstanding issues with Mr. Chipperton. I can't say definitively what tomorrow would bring as far as
the city manager position. I will say to you, though, that as we discussed with Miguel, I've committed to the process and to getting us to the point where we're able to function again as a independent and thriving city. With that said, the staff, I think the question was raised yesterday. I'm not able to respond on behalf of the staff. However, I think that one of the key concerns of the staff had been that there was an enormous amount of work and, quite frankly, not enough individuals in order to do it. So hopefully with the assistance of other individuals, it will lighten to some extent that load and perhaps hopefully remove the questions or the possibilities of that being something that changes in terms of staffing. I, at this point, as far as I know, there isn't any anticipated changes with respect to myself or Ms. Parchment. But as if anything changes, I'll be sure to advise the committee. I know that we've discussed the importance of stability, and I know that that's been one of the concerns of the committee members generally. The only way that I can respond to that by saying what my commitment is with respect to the financial recovery plan and the oversight board, and should anything change, I'll be sure to advise the committee, and then we'd be able to, I guess, address that from there.
What is the ongoing relationship with Mr. Shiverton in the city of Opa-locka?
As of right now, Mr. Shiverton is on medical leave, and he has been since May 19th.
Okay. Does that constitute continued work from home, or and is he still on the payroll for a full salary and all benefits?
No, ma'am. He does not work from home, and he's no longer on the payroll. And I'm not aware of his benefits, but the benefits with respect to being a full-time employee, he doesn't have those benefits.
Okay. Does he continue to have any access to systems or computers or any resources or assets of the authorized assets of the city?
As he is still technically the manager, he still, I believe, has a city laptop and I believe a city cell phone. And also, he currently has a city vehicle.
So he's not on the payroll. He doesn't have any benefits, but he's still the city manager and still has a city car.
The way it's been explained to me, because he simply took a leave of absence, a temporary leave of absence, or that's what the memo indicated to the commission, then yes, all of what you said is valid.
Okay. Mr. Brown, what legal obligation does the city have, if anything, to continue to provide Mr. Shiverton access to city resources if he's no longer an employee?
If the city commission chooses to suspend his access or his benefits outside of that which he's entitled to under the Family Medical Leave Act, then that's a policy decision for the city commission to.
So he's on FMLA?
He's receiving medical leave benefits through FMLA.
Okay.
That's the only benefit from the city.
Okay. So is the city of Opa-locka paying him in fact or not paying
no,
him in
only,
fact?
The only thing he's getting is medical insurance coverage under the Family Medical Leave Act. That's all he's getting. And he got, as Ms. Harrell said, use of the vehicle, the cell phone, and the laptop.
Okay. Does he have a role in city operations?
As of my knowledge, no.
We have an interim city manager, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Is she
acting
a
city manager?
By
the chart, it's titled acting city manager.
Okay. And Ms. Harrell is on contract or on the payroll?
She's on the payroll but not on contract.
She's on what?
She's on the payroll but not on contract.
She's on the payroll but not on contract. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. I think that's all my questions. Anybody else have any other questions at this point?
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay.
I'll just make one observation. I think there was a statement made that the individual's on FMLA, but he's being provided medical coverage. Did I hear that correct?
That's what I've been provided by the Human Resources Department, yes, sir.
So when he was full-time, his medical coverage was being paid by the city of Opa-locka totally? Is that why it's continuing?
Yes, sir.
So his access to a city vehicle, I assume that means that vehicle's maintained and able to get gas and insurance. Is that correct? Okay, thank you.
Insurance, yes, because it's a city vehicle, and actually it's one of the vehicles that's rented by the city.
Okay.
And gas, no.
Okay.
As a follow-up, Chair Miguel, I believe it was the board, asked for a status of all the rental and lease vehicles. There had been a question as to, and I think I actually also spoke with Chief Patterson about this, there had been a question as to the necessity of the lease and rented vehicles. I have advised that all of the rental vehicles need to be returned. And then the board can decide what the outcome is with respect to lease vehicles. There are approximately 25 lease vehicles in the city, including those that are being used by the commission.
Okay.
Are those leases or are those rentals?
Those are leases. There's about 25 leases.
So if they turn those in, there's going to be a penalty on that too.
I apologize. I wasn't referring to my decision to bring back the leases. That was something I was going to leave the board to determine whether or not that was a prudent thing to do. As far as the rentals, I've asked for those to be turned back in.
So the leases are still out there?
Yes, sir.
But the rentals are back?
The rentals are coming back, yes, sir.
Now, are the rentals utilized by undercover officers?
No, sir. But there are leases that are utilized by undercover officers.
What kind of terms are they?
They vary. Quite frankly, I can give the board a spreadsheet. I was actually reviewing them yesterday. There are lease payments that range depending upon the vehicle, and actually there is on at least three of the leases, I believe they are fusions. They're fusions that are being given, I think, by the officers. There's approximately 6 months, for example, on those. There's about three or four of those, but then there are some that are newer that have a longer period before the expiration releases. I can provide, actually, that was a part of the, that's in the Dropbox. Mr. Ellison, I can provide that to you all, the remainder of the committee as needed.
That spreadsheet that you're talking about, does that include the list of who gets the rentals and who gets the leases,
that
the vehicles?
The particular spreadsheet I'm referring to does not, but I do have that as well. I can provide that to you.
Okay. Right.
In addition to the specific cost associated to each vehicle per per month.
Well, I imagine that it's a huge personal inconvenience for members of the commission to turn in their cars. I would strongly urge the members of the commission, as a symbol of commitment to the city, to turn in their vehicles rather than to lay off individuals. If there's a way to save the cash for salaries, I strongly urge you that y'all consider doing that. I mean, it's a 4.5 square mile city. You don't have that far to drive.
Chief Miguel, would you like me to provide you? I know Mr. Rollison brought it up. Do you want me to provide you with whatever penalties may be associated with return to the
That would be great. Obviously, if there's legitimate city business, there needs to be a means by which they can get reimbursed for legitimate city business, in their gas. I recognize that we may have a special need by the vice mayor with his vehicle, and or want to make sure that we're not being inhumane, but I just think that it would go a long way to giving a symbol back to the members of this community that you're willing to tighten your own belts and save the city. Okay, Ms. Parchment, would you please come to the podium? Yes, sir.
there was discussion by the city manager who's on a medical leave in his vehicle. But yet we have another person that has a leased vehicle out and he's not on our payroll or on anything else and don't return the vehicle back. So
who is that?
Mr. Shriver.
Okay.
And now we need to get that vehicle back.
Mr. Legal Counsel, would you approach the podium? Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. As it relates to Roy Steven Shriver's vehicle, one, that's a rental vehicle. Number two, I've been in contact with his attorney requesting that he return the vehicle by close of business tomorrow.
Okay.
And if he does not return it by close of business tomorrow, then we'll take the necessary appropriate actions to recover the vehicle.
Okay. Thank you. If there's other vehicles that are sitting around unused as well, waiting for use or special use, I think those also need to be considered for termination of the lease agreements as well. You know, Mr. Shriver, Mr. Shiverton, their service as city managers, they're no longer in those positions. And, you know, while their relationship with the city may have changed, I think that their hearts as Americans should still weigh on their conscience to do the right thing and turn in their cars as well. Ms. Parchment, I'm going to call you out. Yes. Okay, good point, good point. So if Mr. Shiverton is still the manager and he's home on medical leave, I'm not aware of a city need for him to drive the vehicle, but obviously we can talk with legal counsel and Ms. Harrell to determine if there's some appropriate business that he might need to have as the city manager, but strikes me that the commission has empowered Ms. Yvette Harrell as the interim city manager, and therefore with Heath is on medical leave, I'm not aware of any legitimate city business that would need to be conducting, so seems to me that he should turn in his vehicle as well. But I want to be rational and consider all angles, so I don't want to make a rash decision not factoring in all the factors that might be at play. Ms. Parchment, do I have your commitment to stay with the city and see this through?
With the system.
Okay.
I am committed.
Okay. Okay. You have a tough job. You probably are feeling a little overwhelmed.
A lot.
You may be feeling a little alone. We understand that you've got a tough job to do. We're going to give you the support to the extent that we're able. Obviously, you as a representative of the city have a huge responsibility before you to pull off the nearly impossible. Are you up for that challenge?
I'm up for the challenge.
Okay. Thank you very much for your commitment. We appreciate it. Okay. Do we have a zero retaliation policy in the city? For those of those employees that are reporting any wrongdoing, who is your whistleblower coordinator? Who receives allegations of fraud, waste, and abuse? Who is your designated point of contact to receive those kinds of complaints?
By city ordinance, there's prohibition and whistleblower protection by city ordinance. There is no established protocols in the city. And I recall when Chief Patterson said earlier as to how the county used to do things, whenever there was an ordinance, there was always an implementing administrative order that governed that ordinance and how
it would operate and how it would be function. The city does not have a resolution or administrative order in place to guide whistleblower protections. So the logical place it would rest would normally be in the Human Resources Department, so that the Human Resources Director will handle it and then will conduct the appropriate investigation. However, there's always the protection that can be afforded to them by the State Ethics Commission and or the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics. We'll then do a thorough investigation into any allegations centered around whistleblower retaliation, unethical conduct and behavior, and so on and so forth.
I would like to volunteer Deputy Chief Inspector General Dawn Case from the Governor's Office to work with you, Mr. Brown, on developing whistleblower protocols, an anti-retaliation policy, you need a hotline, whatever you need. She's the best in the state. I'd like to volunteer her as a resource to you and to the city, employees of the city that are trying to do the right thing, so that you've got a sound policy and procedure in place and a zero tolerance for retaliation for anybody that's reporting wrongdoing.
Madam Chair, we are a municipality in the chartered county of Miami-Dade County, and under Miami-Dade County's Chapter 11A, we have the Commission on Human Rights, the commission, and that commission has jurisdiction over all municipalities and others that deals with retaliatory conduct and whistleblowers. So that policy is in place for every municipality in Miami-Dade County, and it is under the jurisdiction on the Commission on Human Rights. And that Chapter 11A covers that and any other thing that's dealing with housing or employment.
Yes,
okay?
Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. The Florida Commission on Human Relations number is also available. I'll bring brochures next session so that we've got some contact information. My business card is also on the back table to the extent that anybody wants to write or call me relative to any issue that you think that this board needs to consider. Okay, moving forward. Where were we? Boston. Number 7. Thank you. Okay, committee reports. Mr. Robinson. Frank, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will make mine fairly brief. Number one, our committee has yet to meet, and I think I've gotten mixed signals from Mr. Heekin, and I want to try to get that clarified. Am I allowed to call the members of the committee, myself, to set up meetings as long as we don't discuss any issue that's coming before the meeting?
Mr. Heekin?
Thank you. And Mr. Rawlinson, I apologize if there's been any confusion. In abundance of caution, at this early stage, what I recommended was that you reach out to Joanne Osborne in Ms. Miguel's office and have her help you coordinate this first meeting. At the regular meetings of your committee thereafter, you would set up the next meeting of the committee. Now, you are correct that provided you don't discuss official business that would likely come before your committee, that would not necessarily constitute a sunshine violation. But as I mentioned, just in an abundance of caution, I wanted to go through this additional layer of protection to make sure our committee members weren't speaking among each other in private outside of the sunshine.
All right, I'll follow your advice, and I'll set that first meeting up pretty quick through Ms. Osborne. In the interim, I've been working with Ms. Harrell, and we've been collecting information on contracts, agreements. I sent her a whole host of things that I wanted to see that I would then be able to provide to the committee. I've been through the procurement ordinance for Opa-locka, and it appears to me from just my cursory observation of some of these agreements and contracts is that they do not appear to follow what the ordinances, the ordinance, there are some latitudes taken by whoever that, you know, the rules say X, but if you manipulate it a certain way, you can do Y. And I'm seeing that surfacing in several of these different documents that I have been provided. I'll just give you a couple of for instances. There were a, and I discussed that with Ms. Harrell this morning, was a series of purchase orders that were issued. So those have been executed and issued to a company for rental cars. An amount of $1,078,422.50. I have not been provided any resolution or any action taken by the commission that this went through. It may exist, but I haven't seen it at this point. But I notice of note that the purchase orders were all split up to stay below a certain amount of money, even though they're all being issued to the same vendor and being issued at the same time, which to me is a conflict definitely of the intent of a procurement ordinance. There's also another one that caught my eye dealing with lawn service proposals, which seemed pretty innocuous. But with all the proposal, it comes to a total of $174,070 to the same vendor. Yet what happened is that the streets were all split as different proposals. And that, too, raises a question to me as to how these big-ticket items are being handled by the administration or how they're being awarded and going out. There's a tremendous amount of latitude in the ordinance to the manager to do a lot of things. As being a manager, I recognize that on the day-to-day operations of a municipality. Those, you know, you can't constantly be taking every nickel and dime item before the commission. But I did it with my assistant, Evelyn, who's here in the audience today. We put together a spreadsheet somewhere on the back there of the information that we have at this point, and you can see the voids that are in there with us trying to figure out exactly how some of these contracts and agreements and consulting services have been obtained. Some of them are month to month, some of them are year to year, and yet they don't come before the commission. At least they don't appear to come before the commission, and the money certainly cranks up. So I'm going to get, again, we'll get with Ms. Harrell. She's going to get with Evelyn so that we can understand a little better of how to get access to some of these, because I think we've accessed everything in the Dropbox that we've been able to get to, and maybe there's some other things or venues, PDFs or something that we haven't been privy to at this point, but we want to get those. I also want to get the labor contracts because I would just, guessing, I would say 75-80% of your budget is salary and fringe benefits. Something like that? Anybody have a clue? Is that what kind of money we're talking about? Yes. So when you start talking about saving money and cash flow going out, it's salaries and benefits. It never really is in the commodities, because there are commodities you have to have. You have to have tires. You have to have gas. You have to pay for certain things that you're obligated to. And then it comes down to people. And with my experience, these contracts in heretofore in other cities have been unilaterally suspended. Pay cuts have been instituted. And those things that have had to be done to make the city whole again, to stop the bleeding, stop the cash flow. And I don't have those contracts yet. So I need to get them. And I think once I get those and once I get the balance of the contracts and understand, because when we do meet the first time, Ms. Harrell, we're going to have staff there to go through some of these and understand exactly what we're looking at. Some of the proposals, I don't know if they're actually in place now. Trying to go against the cash flow and match them up to these, everything doesn't match up. So part of it is just our ignorance still, not understanding exactly what we're looking at and how they've come to be. So if we can get the balance of the information, and then we'll set up a committee meeting and we'll start going through them and figure out where we go from here. That really concludes it for me.
Okay.
Here, Miguel, this is Jack Heekin. May I just follow up real quick?
Yes, please.
Mr. Rollison, you are in the sunshine now, so if you'd like to discuss setting up a future meeting of the Contract Review Committee, you would be able to do so now, and we can provide the notice once we've set that date.
I understand. We'll go with the agenda, and then we'll see if that's what we want to do. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Santiago.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Commissioner Luis B. Santiago for the great city of Opa-locka, and I still live here in Opa-locka in 1156 Parry Avenue. That's my house. I came a little late because I'm working every day, but when I read in this, they've been provided by the community, I can see here a couple of items, not a couple of items, maybe like five, six items. They are belong to the event that I make here in the great city of Opa-locka. Again, I'd like to ask the staff of the city and the city manager, how could this number appear here when we never use any money for my event for the city? Everything that I'm raising is funded by local commercial business people. I don't use any money for bingo for the taxpayer. I don't use any money for 4th of July. And I'd like to know why it's here in the budget. And it's happened already 3 times. And you know, the good thing is I have all the documents that I need to present in there. Never is be from the city morning spending that kind of money that they're talking about here. And I'm sorry to bring it up, but it's concern about Commissioner Luis B. Santiago, and I want to be clear and transparent in whatever transaction that we do here. When I listened the first time, the manager of the great city of Opa-locka, the entry city manager, how come we don't know what's going on with Mr. Devin Shevington? We have to know what's going on. We tried to pass a resolution before to keep him going and pay him his salary. And I see that that's not correct. And we're putting down. And I know that you have record about that. This is the first time that I know. And that's the reason that I say we don't have sometimes so many information about, real information about what really was going on. I don't even know that Mr. Triver is still driving a car for the city. That's new for me. It's new. There's many things that we tried to pass before in the past. 2 years ago, I had record for that resolution that I tried to bring here, and I lose 4-1. And then I tried to tell all my colleagues, let's start to spend the money. Let's do something to, you know, to help in the financial situation that we have. And I lost. Nobody wanted to get to that point to get back the cars, all the benefits that we have. And nobody listened. And that happened 2 years ago, and I bring it back again early this year, and nobody wanted to do it. I lost again. This means this is nothing new, what's going on. But my point is, we really need something specific and real in our financing situation that we have right now. That's confused me. And that put me in a spot like an elected official that I'm part of that problem or I'm part or whatever going on that I don't think so that I am. But I'm going to keep fighting for the right for the people outside. I believe that I still, and I'm here, when freedom, liberty to talk, like a resident and citizen that I am for the United States, living in the great city of Opa-locka. And I'm going to defend that all the time. I don't think it's fair to write in here, okay, my events, because where we have proof that we collecting 98% of the money for all these events that I do in the great city of Opa-locka. And I'm going to continue to come to the meeting.
Thank you. Let me ask staff not to answer his question in this forum. I know he's a commissioner, so in order for him to pose a question of staff, it would be appropriate that we do that in a publicly noticed meeting of the city commission, not of this commission. So just to be cautious about answering any questions. Obviously, make a mental note for future response to the commissioner. But thank you for your comment. Okay. Let's see. Where are we? Hiring a finance and auditing contractor. Okay. We've talked this morning about stability of staffing. We've gotten a commitment from Ms. Parchment to stay on to the extent that we are able to retain services from Ms. Harrell. Obviously, she's hired by the commission, but you know, to strongly urge for stability in staff of the city during this time of financial crisis is extremely important. We've asked for some legal advice relative to Mr. Shiver and Mr. Shiverton's status with the city. We've got a lot left to cover. One of the things that Ms. Harrell is committed to is to work with Ms. Parchment on the identification of some temporary assistance to augment the finance and budget areas of the city, and to possibly hire a consultant to come in independent from HTC and provide some independent consulting services to the city. I would also like to entertain or have this commission entertain the board to entertain the hiring of a finance and auditing or accounting contractor, but we don't have any budget yet. So I would like to seek the permission of this body to move forward with determining a budget for whether or not this group could also hire accounting expertise or other expertise that may be necessary to advise us during the course of this process. So, you know, there may be opportunities for us to procure certain subject matter experts, budget yet to be determined. Any thoughts initially about hiring someone to assist us as a commission or as a board to either help us with a financial statement perspective, do some sort of agreed-upon procedures review, somebody with municipal finance expertise or accounting expertise? I'd like to open that up for discussion by the board members. May I start on this end and work my way down, or volunteers? Okay. Ms. Nelson, do you have any thoughts? Okay. Mr. Wise?
Yeah, I think, as always, kind of additional expertise is more than welcome. I mean, I have great trust in the expertise we have right now, but we are really a few people, plus a surprisingly small people with the city because of the losses of staff. So I think any additional help that we can afford within the unspecified budget is welcome to my.
Mr. Olson.
I think it's a necessity, and I think that whoever is brought on board can serve a dual role in assisting the city and assisting us also. I mean, there's no reason that we have to bifurcate this. We're theoretically all in this together, and so it'd be good to have the same person talking to both entities and evaluating the information and saying the same thing to them that they're saying to us. So rather than having
we have somebody and they have somebody, and now those two people are having a little difference of opinion, or they look at it a different way. So I think it's a necessity that has to happen.
Yeah, I agree with Frank. I think it's very important because I recall that in the past when these kind of situations occurred, it was very important to have an objective or even a party that was responsible, so that when we had questions that need to be answered, then they can go and seek the answer before our meetings on our behalf. So that kind of thing, I think, is very effective.
No.
I agree with the information, especially about using that person to assist the I don't know if CPA firms pro bono work like attorneys do, but we might see if there's some that we might be able to reach out to in this area that might be able to provide us pro bono.
Excellent point. Thank you, Kim. Angela.
I agree with the information that I think any other expertise.
Okay. I would like to ask for a motion to empower me to draw up a budget in consultation with Governor's Office staff and to engage in further discussion with Ms. Harrell on procurement of outside independent accounting and auditing expertise. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right, Ms. Harrell, I'll work with you on that. Obviously, subject to the budgetary discussions as well for the board. Okay. I would like to ask Kim Mills, actually, to go back and research the requirements for the board to procure special services subject to available funds, how that we can best do that in accordance with state requirements and ensure full compliance with all rules and regulations. Kim is a CPA and have great confidence in her ability to hire auditors. She's done that a time or two in her career. So I'd like to ask Kim to go back and assist with that. So, and also maybe to even reach out to a few firms to do the pro bono activities. I think that's a great suggestion. Do I need a motion for that? Or? Okay. All right. Okay. Very good. All right, volunteer participation. It's come to my attention that we have several volunteers. Ms. Nelson has offered some assistance from the City of Miami Gardens to help with the City of Opa-locka. Is there some additional clarification that you can offer relative to those folks that have volunteered to help serve?
As I mentioned at the last meeting of the full board, we are a small powerhouse across the street. However, we have about two people that are willing to take a look at and provide some assistance in shuffling through the numbers and making sure that they're as realistic as possible. We have to get that in order to see what we have to go through, but we're willing to look at it. And if we're starting at the zero-based budget analysis, that is even more work. So I just don't know the methodology that's being used to say what kind of time it's going to take, but we're willing to be there with it.
Okay. We also have Mr. Ashley Hepburn in the audience. Mr. Hepburn, would you approach the podium? Would you? Mr. Hepburn reached out to our office. He's a part-time resident and property owner in the City of Opa-locka. He's attended a couple of meetings in the past. I had the privilege of meeting him at our first meeting and really appreciate his interest and was very impressed by his resume. Mr. Hepburn, would you just introduce yourself, give us a little bit of background into your stellar expertise by your resume that you've provided, and kind of share what your perspective is and what you're willing to help us with.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Or, my name is Ashley Hepburn, part-time resident here in the block. We own a property at 1156 Sesame Street. Minister in the community as well. I go to Park Church of Christ, which is an artist. In terms of my professional experience, currently I'm the Director of Office Management and Budget, St. Lucie County. Several years of experience in various financial positions with Miami-Dade County, 11 years. Worked as Assistant Budget Director for Brevard County about 5 years. And my interest in being here is the fact that I am a property owner. See the impacts that have occurred and would like to do what I can to help the city out because it directly impacts me, my taxes. So I'm here to volunteer in whatever capacity I can in terms of validating documents that are presented to the board. And to the extent I can, because remember, I have a full-time job. I'm going through the budget process right now. Next week we have budget hearings. 3 days straight with our commission. So I can do what I can, and to the extent that I can do that, that's from the respect of reviewing the documents, creating documents, but reviewing documents, and validating the information.
Thank you. Obviously, with your full-time job, to what extent, how would it best be? How could we capitalize on your available time?
Well, it works best.
Okay.
And those hours where I'm not at work, and I've had a conversation with my county administrator, mm-hmm. and he is in support of me.
Okay. Thank you. That was my next question.
Providing mm-hmm. these services.
Okay.
I had that conversation on Friday after I had a email correspondence with Francis. Made him aware of what I was attempting to do, and he was in support of that effort. I've got an office of 13 people. So although I'm not there, stuff is still getting done. But at the same time, I need to be there at certain times to make sure the board understands that I still have an interest in supporting their efforts.
Okay. Is there any objection to Mr. Hepburn providing these services to us that anyone can articulate, willing to articulate in a public meeting?
I would encourage you to connect with the administration. I mean, and they, I wouldn't say it's a vetting process, but I mean, I would want them to have a level of comfort with what you're offering and work out whatever details. I mean, they certainly are in need of the assistance that you're exactly laying out here, whatever portion you give, whether it's reviewing it and they're putting stuff together, you're looking at to see if the numbers make sense. But they're at the 11th hour and they haven't even started to put together a budget.
That is a concern.
For next year.
Yes.
So even if you got the existing budget, and start looking at those numbers, and they're willing to have you participate with them. I mean, I think that's another set of eyes that couldn't hoit.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate you being here. Ms. Harrell, is there any human resources, HR-type process to verify his credentials, his background, that you can speak to?
Yes, ma'am. We would actually, I guess,
even though he's volunteering, we would need to go through the same process, and he would have to, at the very least, provide us his resume or perhaps an abbreviated version of an application so we can make sure that everything is checked out, as I'm sure it will. And at that point, we would also go through, because of the sensitivity of information, there is a certain background check that we would need to conduct as well. And after that, we would be more than willing, as long as he's willing, we're definitely happy to have him.
Okay. All right. Thank you. If, to whatever extent you can expedite that, obviously you'll have a need, and if you're willing to expedite that so that we can capitalize on his resources, that would be great. Madam Mayor, do you have any objection to us moving forward on that front? And Madam Mayor, if you have any objections for just moving forward that you'd like to talk about privately, please call me directly. I don't want to push someone down your throat that I don't know, and no harm, no foul, Mr. Hepburn. I appreciate it, and maybe y'all do know one another, but you're unknown to me. So look forward to getting to know you better and make sure that the background process and the onboarding process is if you have any concerns during that process, please, either you or Yvette Harrell can please let me know. Thank you again, Mr. Hepburn. I appreciate it very much. And please give my regards to your city administrator for the generosity displayed to support a fellow city and another Floridian through a financial crisis. That's really very noble. So thank you very much. Okay. Any other points on that before we move to the next agenda item? I know it's 12:40. We're going over. We need to take a 10-minute break. Let's take a 10-minute break. Thank you.
Mr. Robinson was my dad. I'm Frank. Good, man.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. Okay, we still have a lot left to cover, I believe. Where are we? Okay. We're on item number 10. Do I have all the callers on the call? Let me just make sure. Christian Weiss is obviously here. Kim, Andrew. Andrew, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Okay, Marie Walker, I don't think, had called in. Holly?
I'm back.
Okay, Jack?
Present.
Awesome. All right, we're going to go ahead and continue. We now are taking up item number 10, and that's the identification and assignment of tasks. One of the things that I would like to task the Revenue Committee to look into is to seek information, Mr. Chair, from the Department of Revenue and Department of Financial Services in accordance with Chapter 218.503, I think it's 3B, Florida statute, to determine if there are any available loans for the city. To identify any available loans from the city and report back at the next meeting that has not yet been publicly noticed, but will be noticed shortly. So, to whatever extent that any possible loans may exist to help them with a cash flow issue, if we could research the possible availability. Also, I'd like to see if your committee, Mr. Weiss, could help the city to identify any grants that may be helpful, any HUD dollars, any economic development dollars, any community development block grant money, and the pursuit of any local foundations or companies that might be able to contribute from their foundation of any companies to the survival of the city of Opa-locka. So I'd like to task your committee with the identification of any loans and any possible grants, and then any contributions from any local foundations. I understand there's several large companies in the area that may have an interest in seeing one of the oldest historically black communities survive, and would like to see if there's any community support for that endeavor. I'd also like to ask that you work with Ben Watkins with the Division of Bond Finance to do a complete assessment of the current bonds to make sure that they're current, that they're in compliance with the covenants and restrictions, and whether or not there's any opportunities for renegotiations, any options whatsoever on the bond restructuring that might be available to the city so that we can maybe even defer some of the debt service payments with compliance with the covenants and restrictions. Also to make sure that we are in compliance with the reserve requirements. We want to know exactly what those reserve requirements are. I know you gave a schedule out in yesterday's meeting, but if we could address these additional items, I think that would be helpful, at least for me to understand where we are on the revenue side. On the expenditure side, I think that Chairman Rollinson, you've got a heavy responsibility to look at specific cuts and reductions to identify any immediate cost savings to add to the bottom line directly. I think we need to prioritize expenses, work with Ms. Harrell to do that prioritization. Which expenses need to be paid now, within 20 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days? I think we need to have a prioritization to be able to identify those expenses that are mission critical. God forbid that we have a natural disaster while we're also facing this financial crisis. So, we need to identify some immediate cost savings. If you could work with the city to do that, come up with a listing of those prioritized expenditure cuts
The 32-hour work week is something that is near and dear to the employees' hearts. I recognize that employees are attempting to pay their bills. I recognize that, you know, going from a 40-hour work week and reliable employment to a 32-hour work week that may be unpredictable is difficult to manage your family's budgets, and certainly recognize that that's tough to do and may create an incentive for employees to want to seek employment elsewhere. I know the commission has acted from their authority to act relative to returning people to a 40-hour work week, but as it relates to the ongoing financial health and the responsibilities of this board, I believe that before that restoration to a 40-hour work week needs to occur, we've got to identify some bottom-line expenditures that can be cut so that we can responsibly return to a 40-hour work week at the right time. So we've got a very short window of time to act and identify some cost savings. So if we could have a report back on those recommendations at the next meeting. We did talk a lot about the water and sewer assessment, or a little about the water and sewer assessment. It's an area of concern that might have some unrecognized or unrealized revenue sources. There may be some expenses associated with that, maybe some ongoing projects that need to be evaluated. So, again, I want to recognize Chief Patterson for his assistance on that front to identify some resources to help us with a water and sewer assessment as well as the police department assessment. Jack Keegan, this question is for you. I'd like to request some sort of peer review activity of the legal services and the general counsel to determine to what extent that there might be an opportunity to evaluate what's being provided in-house, what's being provided on contract, the value of those contracts relative to the size, what kind of litigation might be pending. I know you've already engaged in lots of conversation or some conversation with Vincent Brown, and Vincent, you've been so tremendously helpful. Appreciate that dialogue, and if we could continue with that. Mr. Vice Mayor, you are recognized for a comment.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I apologize not being this morning when y'all first started, but it brought to my attention. I've been here, and I just heard a comment about the 32-hour, 40-hour work week. I'm asking the board to bring a 40-hour work week back for the employees of the city, because I'm the one that sponsored the resolution with my colleagues to bring the 32-hour work week. I didn't realize what kind of impact it would have been on the employees, and I brought the resolution because I didn't do a study. I didn't actually study. When I brought the resolution, when my employees were on receiving the first check, they realized that when they was making $700, $1,100 every 2 weeks when they had the 40 hours, now they're making $600-some for the 32 hours. It came to me upset, crying. Asked me, how could we pay our mortgage rent? And they're taking up $400 or $500 out of our check now. My rent is $1,100 a month. And if I get two checks a month, $600 is $1,200. Then I can pay my rent, but I can't pay nothing else. Let me say this to the board. I've been in Opa-locka since 1982. I've been on this dais in 94, on this dais. If anybody know the people, know the employees of this city, I know the employees. I am the employee and the citizen, people, man, in this city, in this community. I brought the union, I sponsored the union back in 95, I think, to bring into the city for the employees. So that way, back during that time, administration was running over the employees. My time is up. Okay. The administration back during that time was running over the employees. So the employees needed some help. And I just started in the city during that time. But I sponsored the legislation to bring in a union that the union employees have now for this city, for them to have. I started in 94 putting down sidewalk streets in the community for the residents. I know this city. I will like for you before you do any cuts or anything in this city. Look at it first and take into consideration what it's going to cost the people in this city. Right now, our police department is lacking in police cars and this net put on the road for our police department. Cars came in a couple weeks ago. We had to send them back. We need those cars to put on the road. We need to put our police out on the road. So much crime and everything is going on. That's a shame. And everybody know that. Everybody know that. It's no secret. So we need as many police that we can on the street. We have a city manager right now. And I done been here through many of them. We have a city manager who make less money than some of her staff people. Now, that's a shame. That's a pure shame. That she's making less money. And she's highly educated. She knows what she's doing. And I support her all the way. But I can't bring her up to a decent pay that she has. I can talk about some of the other people that we had, what they was getting, what they was making this. But I'm not, I don't want to get into all that. But I know about all these things. And it bothers me. It bothers me because this is my city. I love this city. I love this city from my heart. I come here practically every day to my office to try to help people because I know that's what it's all about.
Who is that?
My time is up?
No, it's yeah, sorry about
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay. I never asked this city what this city can do for me, but what I can contribute to this city. When I first got elected, some of this you might not want to hear. When I first got elected, I've been disabled since the 70s, since I got out of the military. And when I started in the open locker, I started as a commission, a vice mayor. I was elected a vice mayor back in 94. I hear some lawyers, Weintraub and other small lawyers, to check it out and see what becoming a commissioner, vice mayor, whatever, would affect my disability. They looked into it and told me no. No, it wouldn't affect your disability. This is back in 94. Time I won the election and got in office, next year I was called in. My disability was cut. Okay. But I was in office. But I had a wife was living there, and she worked hard, a very good lady, very good job, and I still miss my baby right today. We talked about it, and we stood by one another through all this. The baby, we're going to make it. We made it. I made it. Without sticking my hand into trouble, so they kind of will come down here and get me or whatever. I know you understand what I'm saying. I kept clean. Now, I am still clean over 22 years. Last year, the League of City came and gave me an award. So, Mr. Vice Mayor, you should be very proud of yourself. I looked at him. And I said, well, I am. He says, not very many people get this award that I'm giving you now for being in office for 20 years or better. I am for the people of this city. I am for the employees of this city. What else can I tell you? I'm going to work hard to do what I need to do the next 2 years I have in office to make this city greater. But I need your support. I need your help. I don't need you coming in and I know we call you in for help.
Melinda, is the line still active?
This is Jack. It sounds like we got dropped in the commission meeting.
All right, this is Andrew. I guess we'll try to dial back in.
Okay.
Thanks.
Hey, guys.
Yep.
I just text Christian to let him know that we've all got dropped, and I just dialed back in, and we still aren't getting in. So I'm give it a few minutes, and I'll see what he says.
Okay, thank you. We'll stay on the line. Although that was just about to get good, I think.
I think so, too.
Andrew, if you're near a computer, they are broadcasting live on OPA TV.
Okay, then I'll check that.
Okay, they're working on resetting us up. So I would hang up and dial back in just a few minutes.
Andrew, I just emailed you the link to the OPA TV.
Thank you. I was just looking that up.
With the noticing requirements, worked through Joanne in my office, Joanne Osborne, on process to notice your committee meetings. We will do everything that we can to get those publicly noticed timely and make those documents requests available to anyone who's asking. We also voted on a resolution to establish the committees, those committee chairs, and the purview of each of those committees. We had a ratification of the payment to the BB&T Bank relative to the A and B series bonds. It was a payment that was needed by July the 1st that had to take place before our process could kick in for expenditure review. We discussed documentation that was submitted, including the updated cash flow statement, which paints a very, very bleak picture. The numbers are based upon a 32-hour work week, not a 40-hour work week, and there's still dire financial consequences, and the city is struggling to meet its ability to pay its employees and its vendors as early as this month. We had some discussion about the truth and millage documentation and the timetable and the budget hearings and the trim notices that have to go out. We touched a little bit on the utility audit documentation. We heard from both Chairman Weiss and Chairman Rollison relative to the estimating conference committee and the contracts review committee. We established the authority to work with the city on hiring an audit contractor. We discussed volunteer participation. Really appreciate those volunteers that have come forward to offer assistance. We've also talked about some action items and some tasks that need to take place between now and the next meeting. And we've received an update on the status of the audit. And we've talked a lot about staffing the finance department so that the city can meet its deadline of August the 1st. And then we've talked about if the city has any doubt that they're going to meet the August 1st deadline, that they provide that notification to the governor in writing as a method of follow-up. We've discussed some very austere cuts relative to continued operation of the city and making sure that our belts are tightened to ensure that we are able to keep services and employees providing those services rolling. Let's see, have I missed anything, anybody? Okay, I think that kind of summarizes where we are, what we've covered today. We do need to talk about our next meeting.
Before we get there, are we, as a board, are we going to implicitly approve the discontinuation of the 32-hour work week?
I think that's a good point. I think through our ability to oversee the finances, I do believe that we have to approve any finances moving forward from June the 29th. That was our vote. And this has a fiscal impact. And so I think by our vote that we took on the 29th of June, we've already voted to review any expenditures going forward, including salary dollars. So I think that by our vote on the 29th, that we have, in essence, voted to maintain a status quo until we know further whether or not we can extend it back to a 40-hour work week, unless I'm seeing things. Okay. Any other? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I would recommend that we suspend it or hold it in abeyance, not say no to it, but I think with the tasks that you've given me to look at things we've got to pay over the next few days, you know, the coming days and towards the end, you know, the end of the budget year is right at our doorstep. And then those costs are going to continue from October 1 on, and we don't even know what that budget is going to look like. So I think at this point it's premature to allow that to go forward. I think it's held where it's at and do what we can do. I mean, you've asked me to do these things, what immediate cost-saving measures we can put in place before we return to 40-hour work week. And, listen, folks, the money's in salaries and benefits. It's not anywhere else. That's where it's at. So you're at 32. I say we stay there for right now until I can get with staff and we can go through these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it is my personal belief that restoring the 40 hours should be one of the highest priorities. I would like to ask city staff because you testified that the cash flow projections that you have made were based on 32-hour staff and not on 40-hour staffing. So I would like to see what the impact was on a monthly basis to go back to 40 hours so we know is it $100,000 that we have to cut somewhere else to make up for that? And it certainly... just my personal belief that I'd rather cut rental cars than salaries. But at this point in time, and that's subject to Madam Chair's proposal for the next committee meeting, I would say we should make this a very short-term proposal. So I would propose that we keep it at 32. I would make a motion to keep it at 32 hours for the rest of this month. And then if we have another meeting prior to prior to July 31st, which I presume we will, we can and should readdress that and put that on the agenda.
I think we have a motion, a second, and a vote from the 29th that enables us to do that without an additional motion.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Microphone, please.
I just want to remind you about the
turn it on. Okay. Sorry, I can't hear you.
I just wanted to remind you about the earlier motion that Mr. Weiss made at the beginning of the meeting about allowing the chair and vice chair to approve emergency type transactions that come up between now and the end of the month for later ratification by the board.
Okay. Mr. Rollison, does that conflict with any of your process developments?
No,
working?
I think it's necessary. I mean, we can't shut things down, and it's not our intent. So
okay.
If that's what we do for the interim, then I'm all for it.
Okay.
This is Jack Deacon.
Yes, Jack.
I would strongly advise against such a motion authorizing the chair and vice chair to approve items outside of the sunshine. If the board wants to authorize the chair to take that action to approve emergency items, which I believe is what Mr. Weiss was looking for, that would be one thing. But requiring the chair and vice chair to work together to approve emergency items outside of the sunshine would not be advisable.
No, I think it would be either or. Sometimes somebody's not available. It gives two avenues. If some emergency comes up, that you contact chair, and if they can't get the chair, then they get the vice chair, and then they make that decision unilaterally. That would be my intent.
Okay.
I amend my motion in such a way to make it an or.
Okay. Do I have a second? Second by Kim. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. So next meeting, I can offer a couple of dates. I believe that our next meeting needs to be by telephone with publicly available here in this facility, and to the extent that those of you are able to make it here that might be nearby, that would be great. I have a proposal for consideration, and that would be the 13th of July at 10 a.m.
I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay. Anybody else?
It's the 13th?
Yes, sir.
I'm available.
This is Vernita Nelson. I do have a conflict as I will be in mediation on behalf of the City of Miami Gardens, but once that's over, I'll come here like
okay. Do you have any idea what the timetable is
for
that?
It starts at 10.
Starts at 10? Do you have any idea how long it will last?
They have it on my calendar until 4, but I don't know how long I am needed.
I see. Okay.
Let me ask a question on the quorum so I'm clear on this.
Okay.
If a meeting's called, is quorum can be made on the phone, or does quorum have to be in person and then the people on the phone can vote?
Yes. No,
it
quorum
can
be made
by phone.
Yes.
Okay, fine. I'm good.
We could move the meeting to the afternoon on the 13th so that we could make sure that we accommodate Ms. Nelson's possible availability. Okay. Yes. Okay. And that's at what time? 7? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I think we'd be better staying with the morning.
Okay.
I know.
Okay, 10 a.m. acceptable? Okay.
And since there is a call-in number established, maybe I can
call in and then,
okay,
we appreciate that.
All right. Can I ask the chair, is there a reason we don't do it earlier than, 9 o'clock? Is that bad for people? Or
No. We could do it at 9 o'clock.
Today is the first time we've done it at 10. We routinely have done it at 9.
Yeah. Would 9 o'clock be better?
I mean, it is for me.
Okay, let's 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock.
All right, let's do 9 o'clock on the 13th. Do I have an interest in doing earlier? 8? 9?
No, I'm in.
7? Okay, we'll do it at 9 o'clock. Great.
So we come here, things are set up, we telephone through, and staff is here, and so forth.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, I encourage you, if you're local, to the extent that you're able to make it here, that would be great, so that the public can have a...
No, I think it's good. I mean, those that are here locally, if we can make it.
I think that would be terrific. Okay. We may have a need that comes up from the 13th to meet sooner, but obviously we've got a looming deadline on August the 1st that the city has. Do we have any interest in moving to also schedule the meeting after that? And if so, I've got the 27th, 28th, and 29th of July as possible. Actually, it would be the 28th and 29th as possible dates for a follow-up meeting that we could also go ahead and notice of the full board, understanding that the committees may want to meet in off weeks or even the same time before or after our meeting, preparably before so you can communicate the results.
27th's good for me.
I'm flying on the 27th or something. 28th, would we be able to? 28th? Yeah.
Let me take a look on my brain.
Okay.
I can do the 28th.
All right.
I'm good with the 28th.
Is this one by phone or in person?
To the extent that everyone's able to meet in person here, that would be great. And then probably by phone for those that can't.
If it's in person, then I recommend you meet it back at 10 o'clock, which gives us time, those of us that are flying in, time to get here from the meeting.
Okay. All right. So let's do 10 o'clock on the 28th. And to the extent that you're able to be here locally, that would be great. Otherwise, we'll be by phone.
The 13th, if it's better to be 10 o'clock. I was just trying to get started earlier.
My phone,
that's good. The 9th, 9 o'clock is still
good. 9 o'clock is still good for the 13th. And then the 28th, we can do 10.
Madam Chair, does the date on the 13th give us enough time for the public notice to go out?
This is Jack Heakin. Yes, if we get it out today, that will be the 7 days advance notice that's recommended.
Okay. All right. I'll get with Joanne before we head home to get that out, and then we'll work with Ms. Harrell to get that noticed. Thanks, Jack.
Madam Chair, I would like to convene a meeting of the Contract Review Committee on the afternoon of the 13th after that meeting if people are available.
Okay.
I know that they'd be on the phone.
All right.
Okay. So if we can notice a meeting on that also, Jack, at in the afternoon of the 13th, or say immediately, take a break. But I mean, at the conclusion of the regular board meeting, there will be a committee meeting of the contract committee.
We'll need to give a specific time that we expect it will start.
Okay.
I would say...
I'm wondering if we shouldn't flip-flop that. Have the contract review committee meet first.
That's fine.
And then the full board meet so we can hear the results of your committee meeting.
Well, we have the commission meeting. That's true. That's true. Okay. We can do that. We can have the committee meeting at 9. What does that look like for the... You're still by phone. You got... Okay. So...
Okay.
That's good. All right. So the committee meeting will be at 9 o'clock the contract committee.
Contract review committee at 9, and then let's do the full board at 11.
I think that's good. I mean, I'm gonna have some conversation with the city manager beforehand to have some stuff ready for us so it's not a scrambling for stuff, and I think a couple of hours we can do good.
Okay. Is 11 then of the full board work? Okay.
Yeah, we'll go
9 a.m. of the contract review, 11 full
11,
board.
And then 11 for the full board.
Okay. And then the 28th at 10, and committee meetings yet to be determined between now and then, but will be scheduled. Okay. Public comment.
Madam Chair, as the public is coming up on the 28th, I will be in rural Mississippi. I will attempt to call in. Not too sure how that's going to work.
Okay.
But I will call in on the 28th.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Public comment. Anyone interested in coming to the podium, offering public comment, please identify yourself. We'll try to limit comments to 2 to 3 minutes if possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Kelly Sidopalak, I wanted to have brought up at the meeting yesterday, I didn't hear it mentioned, regarding the infrastructure, $40 million infrastructure, state revolving loan. That impact zones 1, 2, and 6 that have been approved not only by the city but by the state. And there was some concern that DEP was holding it up, and I'd ask this committee, if that's the case, to look into that, because that dealt with not only commercial infrastructure but residential as well. And as we're talking about discussion of infrastructure and pipes and those kind of things, we've got projects already ready to go. I don't see a need why they will be held up since they have been approved and the funding and all of that is in place. So if you could please check on that, and if it requires your approval, that you would do that as well. If not, then give the okay to go forward. I also, as you're looking at the committees, and I mentioned the first time, I know you're dealing with the numbers and trying to get it what's accurate on the numbers, but I hope at the end of the day, part of what will occur is a reorganizational structure of the city itself, because that needs to take place as well. I've said on many occasions, and I felt like I was hearing deja vu over the last 2 years, that I've been saying, it's not just about having the money, but it needs to be structure in place that you follow so that you continue a pattern of stability. So I would hope at the end of the day that will come forward as well. I think some of the comments that you've made and some of your members are right on point, asking the right questions regarding contracts, the issue of three city managers and other spending decisions that have been made over the last few years. But please, as you ask the questions, make sure when you get the answers that you get, in my opinion, the documentation that supports whatever decision was made, because that to me is a challenging issue. And my final comment is to the member here, Ms. Wallace, and you're absolutely correct in what is being kind of put out there. The state is going to make us do it, and then we just get to blame the state. I that statement is really right on point because of some decisions that have taken place, but we are where we are. And we look forward to, obviously, the support and help that you're going to give us. But please take a look as soon as you can on that Zone 1, 2, and 6 issue.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. I think let's go ahead and adjourn unless there's some comment from the board before we close. Okay, hearing none. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here today. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Maybe some of it, but it's very rare.
Thank you.